All right, we're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 17 tonight. And again, thank you. I always appreciate when you're here at church and being faithful to the Lord and doing what you are supposed to be doing. I don't think I'll be long tonight. I hate to say, I don't know why I say that sometimes because I don't want to box myself in, not that I go long anyhow. But I want to share a thought. I don't think it'll take long tonight, but I think it's important. I think we need to see it out of this story, maybe a little different direction in this story than you would typically hear out of the story of David and Goliath. We all know football season has started. A week ago Saturday, we made the mistake. We went to the USC game, and we got the tickets like a month in advance. We didn't realize that when that Saturday showed up, it was going to be like 100 and something degrees. And if you've ever been to the Coliseum, it has zero shade. So that was a blessing. We left way early. But football season has started. There's an illustration I've heard used about football. It's a game where 70,000 people who desperately need exercise are watching 22 men who desperately need rest. How many of you have ever heard that one, right? And that's kind of what it is. People are up there and, you know, watching it, and they ought to be out doing something. There are a lot of things in life we should be a part of that we choose not to be a part of. A lot of people are really content in the most important areas of life with sitting on the sidelines. I remember in the early 90s, I was coaching our basketball team, and we were in several different leagues at that time. And so I think we had one of the leagues, we had football in the morning. And Stephen, you probably remember, we were in like 75 different leagues. And then in the evening, we would play in another league. We'd have our basketball team. So we were doing two sports at a time. So we played football that morning. That was the old ACE league. And we had a game in Hesperia, and we had a really good basketball team. We could run 15 deep, so it's like, you know, we had to go to Hesperia after the game. And I don't know whose idea that was. They said, look, you don't need to take all the players for the game. Just take six, and you should be fine. That's all that fit in my car. So I picked out six players, and at that time, we had a lot of boys that were high risk, high reward. That's back in the days when we were in the area over there where all the gang fights were, and we had reached a bunch of kids in the gang. And so, you know, these kids, high risk, high reward. So some of them were on the team. So we go up there, and we're playing in Hesperia. Now, I didn't realize, I forgot, Hesperia is kind of like high desert. And so when you're playing athletics in the high desert, it has that light air. And so you get tired quick. So we were a pressing running team. So right off the bat, I'm like, okay, this might just be a little harder than we thought. I only have one sub. And so we're playing this team, and really, even with six guys, we should have been blowing them out. And it was really close. It was kind of frustrating. And so I called a timeout, and I'm talking. Well, I didn't know there was two of the boys that were buddies on the team, and they just didn't like the way things were going and thought the ball wasn't being passed to them, and they were getting a bad attitude. And I'm sitting in this gym. I'm like, we have our timeout, and I send you five guys to go back in. And one of the guys said, I'm not going in. I'm not playing. And I'm like, excuse me? He goes, I ain't going in. I'm mad about blah, blah. I'm not going in. I'm like, you know, I ain't got time to deal with you. I said, you're in. He goes, I'm not going in either. And I'm like, excuse me? Like, we're not going in. And I got in their face. I said, let me explain how this is going to work. I said, if you don't go in, I'm kicking you off the team right now. And they're like, we don't care. And so I got the other four guys. And I'm like, all right, you four are in. They're like, wait a minute, it's basketball. Isn't it supposed to be five? You know, it's like four. I'm like, get in there. Just go play. Do what you can. And I told the other guys, I said, get out of here. I don't even want you in the gym. Get out. I want to see your face. Go stand by the car outside. And they didn't go in. Now, here's the funny part about it. We actually started our lead. We were leading like four or five. By the time we were done, we were up like 20. I think the other team was so confused. We only sent four guys in. They're like, wait, is this some kind of ploy? Are they trying to do something to confuse us? But those two guys refused to get in the game. And by the way, I did kick them off the team. Now, I'm going somewhere. We'll get to that in a minute. This here is the story of David and Goliath. Now, I don't understand how battles were, but Israelites on one side, the Philistines on the other side. I would have thought that you line up and you get ready and you just go at it. But apparently, the Israelites, and a little bit apprehensive. So day after day, Here comes Goliath, and he's talking trash, and he's defying their armies, and he's defying their God. And give me a man. I just, one guy. And if he beats me, we'll be your servants. And if I beat him, you're our servants. And nobody steps up. And I don't, and to me, I'm thinking, why did they need to step up? Just run out there, overtake him, and fight the whole army. But that's how it goes, day after day after day. David, who's not even part of the army, David was always left out. Samuel comes to anoint a king in his family. They don't even let him come to dinner. Now he's not in the board. So his dad's like, hey, take a lunch down to these guys. Like, okay. So he takes a lunch down there. And when David goes to the battle to give the food to his brothers, out trots Goliath, right? Same routine. They've been doing it for 40 whatever amount of days. I think it's 40 days. Give me a man. Let's fight. Blah, blah, blah. If I beat him, if I beat him, you serve us. If you beat me, we'll serve you. And David sees them cower in fear. And David's like, hey, time out. What's going on here? And they explain to him what's going on. And then they tell him, hey, you know, the king said that whoever fights him gets, you know, all. I think he got rewards. He got free tax. And he got the king's daughter. Now, I don't know if that's her reward. I think that was more of a bad prize. And so, you know, and so David's like, I got this. Don't worry about it. Now I'm paraphrasing, okay? It's not in the Bible. You're not going to hear that. And he's like, I'll do this. And then so he goes and talks to Saul, and Saul tries to talk him out of it. And next day, and we all know the story. David goes, he gets his stones, he goes out there, and Goliath goes down. I mean, David was so, you know, just like, I'm just going to take this guy out. He didn't even have a sword to cut his head off. He had to take Goliath's sword and said, this will do, and he cut his head off. Now, we all love that story. That's a great story. But that's not what I want to focus on. I do appreciate that David, unlike the others, was not afraid. Most of them are. I want you to read three verses with me, and then I'll tell you where we're going tonight. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 17. I'm going to read three verses. In verse 2. And Saul and all the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched in the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. That's where they were fighting. Go down to verse 11. In verse 10, here Goliath comes out and talks his trash again and all that nonsense. Verse 11, when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Verse 19. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. What do you see in those verses? See, sometimes here's what we think about the story. The army's out there, and there's really big army, and they're afraid of this really big giant guy, and David says he's gonna fight, and then David goes back to the palace and they tell Saul about it. And Saul tries to outfit him, and so he'll fight. And David said, I don't need your outfit. I'm good. I'll take care of it with God. Where was Saul? All three verses tell us Saul was where he should have been. He was down at the battle. He was there with the army. And by the way, that's where he should have been. Just like when David fought with his armies, David was out there. And the one time before he got too old to go out with the armies that he didn't go out there, he committed sin with Bathsheba. But here's my point. Saul should have been the one to fight. Saul was not at the palace waiting for news of the battle. Saul was where he should be, and he saw him come out, and Saul was head and shoulders above every single guy. He was the biggest guy of the Israel army. And by the way, up until this point, he was not a wimp. He fought the battles of the Lord until he got goofy and he got away from God. But here he is, and the enemy's showing himself, and he's sitting on the sidelines doing nothing. He's sitting on the sidelines when he should have been the one out there fighting and trusting God for the victory. And I believe if he would have trusted God and he would have been in a right place, he would have went out there and he would have beat Goliath. But David, who wasn't even part of the army, had to do his job. That's why Saul was kind of embarrassed and, here, wear my armor. Man, that didn't fit. That didn't fit anybody. He should have been out there. He was with the army. He was in the right place. He was there. He was God's chosen to lead the people. But he didn't take the challenge. There he sat. Silent and just as fearful as the men in his army. He was willing to sit back on the sidelines and do nothing. David had to bail him out. I wonder what he was waiting for. I mean, it was just by the providence of God and the plan of God that David showed up. Because no one else was going to step up. What, did he think it was going to change on day 42? No. He sat on the sidelines. But you know what happens? A lot of Christians sit on the sidelines too. We're content with just a little bit of Christianity. We're not willing to put ourselves out there in the heat of the battle. And let me just tell you something. There are some things. Now in this story, there's a happy ending because God had a man who would do the job. But you know, up until that point, there are some bad things that can happen when you sit on the sidelines. Let me share a couple with you. Look at verse 10. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Verse 23, this is when David shows up. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Goliath, of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. You know, one of the things that, happens when Christians sit back on the sideline and they don't do anything, the giant or the enemy gets bolder. It gets bolder. I don't know, I wasn't there. And I'm not trying to over interject. But day after day when he came out and no one accepted the challenge, I guarantee you he got a little bolder. He got a little bolder. He got a little bolder. He talked more trash. He criticized their nation. He criticized their army. He was defiant towards their God. Why? Because there was no one to stand up and say, hey, shut up. And if you, I know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. Your parents don't like that. Refrain from speaking. Or else I'll come and help you. By the way, David, shut him up. When they cut your head off, you don't talk very much anymore. Someone needed to stand up and say, listen, it's not about him talking smack about our army. Don't you understand what he's doing? He's defying God. And you know what? That's a line crosser. By the way, you know what? I'm tired. This little soft sissy society we have has pushed its way into our Christianity. You get these so-called pastors, they don't even want to preach anymore. They want to be communicators. Oh, you know, he's just such a great communicator of the Word of God. Man, get the sand out of your mouth. We don't need communicators. We need people to stand up and say, this is truth. Because if we don't stand for the truth, who will? Unsaved people have been unsaved for centuries. The devil has had his plan and his agenda forever. Why are things getting worse? It's not because the devil has gotten worse. He's always been evil. It's not because he has infused his ideology into societies. He's been doing that forever. Society gets worse when Christians don't say a thing. When Christians aren't willing to stand up and say, hey, and by the way, we don't have to be, I don't want to use words that you parents don't want your kids to use. We don't have to stand up and be overly mean-spirited about it. We need to be passionate about it. I don't want the enemy to get bolder. We have several, and Satan is our enemy. By the way, the Bible tells us to resist the devil. Oh, devil, leave me. It doesn't work. You got to fight him. You got to say, I'm not doing this. You got to push back in the power of God. We have the flesh. And Timothy, as Paul told Timothy, you got to flee those youthful lusts. Listen, we all have to fight that. And when we get passive in the way that we live, we get passive in being careful about what we believe and what the Word of God says, you know, we're just going to get run over by even our own flesh. We put ourselves in bad situations. We allow other people to influence us. Well, I don't want to be mean. Hey, someone's got to stand up. And if it's a matter of people pushing you to do the wrong thing, that's when you stand. I'm not doing that. But what does the Bible say? My son of sinners entice thee? No, I'm not doing it. The world is getting worse. The Bible tells us we're not supposed to be conformed to this world. We're supposed to be transformed. The world wants everybody to be the same. This liberal ideology, these politics, these politicians, these actors, and these athletes all want to sit there and rant and rave about social justice, social issues, and they all sit in their air-conditioned houses, in their gated communities, doing nothing to help anybody. I don't want to hear a millionaire whine about how hard he has it. You don't like this country, go somewhere else. These idiot basketball players says, I'm tired of America, I'm moving to Hawaii. I don't even know where to go with that. Now, it wouldn't bother me if Hawaii became its own country, amen? It just wouldn't bother me a whole lot. They make California look conservative. We're just crazy. We're not doing anything. The people that want to whine the most are doing the least to help. Who has the truth? The Bible. Christians. And when we sit on the sideline, we're not helping anybody. You know what the Bible needs? We need some bold Christians. We need some Christians that are, and I'm not talking about being a dummy. I'm not talking about that. Some people are like, you know, people hate me because I stand for God. No, they hate you because you're a knucklehead. Okay? Now, if push comes to shove, let them hate away. But, you know, just stand for what's right. We need to be bold about giving the gospel out. Well, you know, if I tell somebody Jesus is the only way, they might get offended. No, if they get offended, that's between them and God. Some people get offended because they don't like the truth. That's between them and God, but that doesn't mean, you know, so what we've done is, we don't want to reach up for Jesus, and I don't want to offend them, so I'm not going to tell them the truth. What? So you're just going to let them continue? The enemy's getting bolder. We have, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be, and again, when I say things, I'm not being political, because it's not politics, it's morality. But we as Christians have stuck our head in the sand, and we have no clue what's going on out there. And we're going to pay for it, and your children are going to pay for it. I'm just telling you right now. You better be very careful. All these little things that you let the kids watch and pay attention to are pushing garbage down their throat. I don't watch this. I just read it. Peppa the Pig. Where do you guys come up with this stuff? Now they have gay couples on there. Oh, you know, I don't know what. Look, what's next? Cocomelon? How are our kids going to learn their ABCs? It's just, they're throwing it in everything. And we're willingly ignorant. And when we're willingly ignorant, can I tell you why? We just don't want to stand up. I don't want to make you mad tonight, but let me consult. Okay. But when you just throw one of these at your children, because you don't want to fight them, sin's getting bolder. And I know, oh, pastor, you're like a boomer. Yes, I am. Boom. Don't walk on my lawn. No. How many times I have to deal with stuff because some kid got a cell phone? And it's just garbage. The enemy gets bolder. You know who should be bolder? Christians. Let me quote a few verses to you. Acts chapter 4, verse 13. Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men. Now that's what they thought. They weren't college graduates. They didn't have the training. They marveled and they took note of them that they had been with Jesus. You know what made them know that they had been with Jesus? They were bold. They just told the truth. They weren't afraid to preach in cities that were steeped in paganism and had no clue of who Jesus Christ was, even if it meant that they were going to suffer persecution. And they're like, you know what? These guys, they in our mind, they're ignorant. They haven't been to school. But man, you know, they must have been with Jesus because they're bold. They're bold. We need boldness. If we're not going to be bold, the enemy is going to be bolder. And it's getting disgusting. I mentioned this on Thursday night. If you weren't here, I'll say it again. There was a recent study that was just concluded. 80% of the pastors in America, now that's not all Christian churches. Most churches are about as Christian as my left foot. Well, my left foot is Christian because I am. It's, you know, it's my shoe. 80% of pastors in this country do not have a biblical worldview. In other words, they do not view what's going on in our society. They don't view what's going on in our times through the lens of God's truth. They view it through what society says. And that's why you have pastors coming out for transgenderism. They're coming out for homosexual marriage. And now they're coming out for abortion. That's disgusting. That's anti-God. And that is evil beyond all comprehension. How anybody who can even claim any type of religiousness, if that's a word, even if it's false, to sit there and say that it's okay to slaughter an unborn child, there's something drastically wrong. But it's been years, years, decades of Christians keeping their mouths shut. We just want to be cool in the community. We don't want to stand out. I'll be sensitive here, but even when we were trying to get approval to build our building, there was groups in the city that didn't like us, and we found out from some of the other groups that did like us, why? Because of our stand on the scriptures. Okay? The enemy gets bolder. Verse 11, the army gets weaker. When Saul, verse 11, and all Israel heard the words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Verse 24, and this is when he comes out, does all this stuff again. And when all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and were sore afraid. Now. I have a hard time believing that there was not one valiant soldier among that crowd. And I can prove to you that there wasn't. Abner, who was captive of the host. This guy, other stories, he fought. He wasn't afraid. You know who else was in that battle? Jonathan. What do you mean, John? Saul's son. Saul's son, who when they were going to have a battle, took his armor bearer and said, hey, why don't we just get a head start on this thing? Let's run over here and you and I will just start killing the army by ourselves. Remember that story? And he did. They're sitting there in silence. I guarantee you some of David's eventual mighty men were sitting in that crowd too. Why didn't any of them step up? I'm going to tell you why they didn't step up. Big mouth comes. They looked at Saul, the biggest guy, the best fighter, and they looked at him and he was afraid. He wasn't willing to stand up. So neither did they. Look, when we sit on the sidelines, we're weakening God's army. We don't need a bunch of soldiers who aren't willing to fight. We don't need cheerleaders. You know, 2, 4, 6, 8, you were good, but we were great. We don't need that. Okay? Well, I'm like, get in here. You know, you can go 1 against 100 if you want. Look, this isn't one of those cheesy Chinese kung fu movies where one guy beats 100. And every time he does anything, it's the same sound. Psh, 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 psh. I mean, he can hit him with a chainsaw and it's... Psh, you know, bzz, bzz. You see, we're weakening the army when we're not doing our part. We're just sitting on the sideline. By the way, get in the game. There's a lot going on around here and we need more people to do it, not less. You say, okay, Pastor Myers, what can I do to help? Park at Blue Line. That wasn't in the notes, but let's do that, okay? You know, visitors show up and there's no parking. They just drive around, they'll leave. But there's a lot of things to do. We don't need less soldiers, we need more. We don't have this overabundance. By the way, that means that everyone's needed. You are a lot more important to God than you realize. You are a lot more important in doing in what happens in Christianity, and more specifically what happens in this church, than you realize. Hey, look, I don't want to sit on the sideline. I want to get going. I want to do something. And maybe my tendency is sometimes to want to be involved in everything. You know, I'm overseeing the singles. I don't have time for that. I don't even like the singles. Just kidding, I do like the singles. You know, look, I just like being around them. You know what I miss? I'm teaching Sunday school now. I'm teaching the Filipino ministry. Sorry, now the Filipinos are going to come next week. Hey, be nice. By the way, they're good. You know, they know what I like to eat, and they just bring it. Like, ah. But you know what I miss? I miss driving the shuttle van. I didn't drive the shuttle van on Sunday morning sometimes, take a turn, because we needed drivers. I just like doing it. But I'm in the Sunday school class. I can't do it now. We have plenty of drivers. I'm just saying there's a lot to do. I like being involved. I don't just like sitting on the sidelines. It's not as fun. You know what's fun? When you come to church and you're doing something. Man, I'm in the choir. By the way, I was in the choir at one time. It's a horrible idea. I sing so bad. And I came early for practice. Remember Brother Harry? He's like, get in. Sit down. Just, all right, I'll sit down. Next thing you know, I'm up there singing, and it's like, okay, and people next to me are looking like, you know. By the way, I figured it out. If you don't know how to sing, you're in the bass section of the choir. I thought, wow, that's a special section. I know, it just sounds for people who cannot sing. Bass. That's the side Brother Ross is on. Everybody's needed. And if you're needed, you know what that means? Everybody's important. You're important. You are so important to the cause of Christ. Do you understand, at all of us working together, there's more people that can be reached. One person only has so much influence. One person can only do so much. There are people that you can reach that nobody else can. Again, I remember years ago, when I was in college, I was on a bus route, and I found this little one block area. It was like this industrial area. And it was up against the freeway, I was over there. It was backside of my route. And it was like, hey, there's some apartments back here out of the way. And I remember I went back there and I started doing some door knocking. We started picking up some kids. I knocked on one door. There was this one kid in the area, though. He would see me just throw stuff at me and swear at me and run. And I'm like, this kid is horrible. And I'm like, why would any kid act like that? And then I made the mistake of knocking on the door where he lived. He lived with his grandma. And boy, the way she talked to me, she made him sound like a saint. I'm like, this poor kid. This kid was nothing but, every time I was in that area, if he saw me, he was a terror. But I remember I met another kid, another teenage boy, and he got saved and came on the bus. And the next week after he got saved, he came to church that Sunday, and guess who he had with him? Satan's little brother, that kid. That kid came, and he got saved, and started coming to church. I couldn't reach him. Fact of the matter is, I was kind of hoping that somebody else got a hold of him. But you know what? His friend reached him. There's people out there that God has that only you can reach. You're needed. I'll hurry through the last few. The battle gets delayed. Verse 16. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening and prepared himself 40 days. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. They were up on the lines, but all they were doing is just listening to this guy day by day by day by day. Look, day one, it should have said, I don't care what he says. That's the enemy. Let's go. Let's get a battle strategy and let's go. Instead, they wasted day after day after day after day. Let me just ask you, how much time are you going to waste? We procrastinate in everything. You know, one day I'll serve God. No, you won't. Not if you don't do it now. What in the world are we waiting for? We are wasting so much time. And there is so much that needs to... Look, do you understand? This world is quickly crashing in. I think the Lord's coming soon. I mean, if he doesn't come, he's probably going to deal with America. We make Sodom and Gomorrah look like a conservative, you know, look like Texas or what everybody thinks Texas and Florida is. And that's okay. I'm not whining about that. That's not our job. God will sort that out and do whenever he wants. But it's our job while we're here. Can I just tell you this? As bad as our world is, there's people that still want the Lord. They are out there. But not if we're sitting on the sidelines. There are people that are looking for answers because when it's darkest, the light will shine the brightest. When sin is all over the place, there are people that are seeing the ravages of sin. They just don't know what they can do to get over it. Don't we? Then why are we on the sidelines? They need us. This world needs us. It needs us not just to be involved, it needs us to be aggressive. I hate passiveness. Can I get a witness? Every month when we have that men's Bible study at my house on Saturday night, every time we have the Bible study, these fights come on. We sit there and watch the fights. And the guys have heard me say it. I just don't like the guys that are passive. The other guy's coming to fight, and he's always backing up. I'm like, why? Backs him up against the fence and then beats him. It's like, what are you being passive for? If someone's coming at you, stand your ground. You know what we are as Christians? We're passive. By the way, we think that by backing up, the enemy will leave us alone. You know how bullies are, right? You back up one time, they're just going to keep pushing. Keep pushing. Keep pushing. Don't back down. Aggressiveness. Pastor, I'm just not an aggressive person. I know. But you show up to church with your favorite team's tie on. I've seen them. You go to some game and 75,000 degrees below zero, the guy's got his shirt off and he's got his team's logo painted on his chest. I'm like, what's that all about? It's like they're aggressive about it. They're passionate about it. Hey, we don't need to, look, there's too much going on. Let me give you a couple more here. The reward gets unclaimed. They tell David, verse 25, and the men of Israel said, have you seen this man that has come? Surely to defy Israel as he come up. And it shall be that the man that killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches. I mean, hey, cha-ching. I mean, like government stipend. And will give him his daughter. That's not a cha-ching. David didn't take it here. He took it later, and he regretted it the rest of his days. And make his father's house free in Israel. No taxes. And David spake to the man that said, now look, David did this for the Lord, but he did hear this. And David spake unto the man that stood by him, saying, excuse me, what shall be done to the man that killed the Philistine? Run that by me again. And he told him. Do you know, we don't serve the Lord for reward, but you know the Lord does give us reward. There is great reward in serving Jesus Christ. And by the way, the reward isn't just when we get to heaven. Do you know the reward is on this earth? Do you know it's better to live for God and get in the game than to sit on the sidelines? When you sit on the sidelines, you don't get any of the perks of being in the game. And I know guys will watch sports and their team wins, and it's like, we won! It's like, we won! You did nothing! You did nothing! You didn't win anything. Did you get a trophy? You had to go buy your own, okay? Yeah, I was a Rams fan. Pray for me. I didn't get the trophy. I got one. Somebody gave me a little pin from the Super Bowl, but look, who cares? Do you understand that eternity? God rewards us for what we do in his grace. It goes unclaimed. The blessing of serving God on this life, it goes unclaimed. The fulfillment of everything that we can accomplish. You know, it's good to go home on a Sunday and think about what the Lord did. You know who's excited about what happens on the bus routes? Those that are on the buses. Someone gets saved. By the way, our teenagers have done a fabulous job. We have people coming to church and people that have been saved, kids in the Christian school, because our teenagers, families that are coming to church because our teenagers go out there and serve the Lord. That's reward. There's a reward when you walk around and say, hey, maybe there's somebody God allowed me to encourage. Maybe there's someone God allowed me to get the gospel to. But you don't get that if you sit on the sideline. And I, by the way, I rejoice in what other people do. I rejoice in what our church does, but it's nice when you have a hand in it. Someone's having a tough time. You know, people come to you, hey, you pray with me about this situation. Just text me one-on-one and we'll pray. We'll come back. Hey, I got that job. You prayed. You and I prayed for that. We got that job. You know, sometimes people have doctor's appointments. Hey, you know, I got to have this thing and I'm praying it's not this. Will you pray with me? I don't want to tell people. I don't want people to freak out, and you pray and they come back and say everything's good. It's negative. Okay. It doesn't happen if you're on the sideline. You got to get in the game. There's reward. One more. The purpose gets confused when we're on the sideline. Look at verse 28. So David checks into it. Hey, what's going on? All this. And they're kind of getting the idea here. Hey, David's formulating a plan. And Eliab, who was Eliab in verse 28? That was David's oldest brother. That was David's biggest brother. That was the one that when Samuel Solomon said, this is a guy right here. He's head and shoulders above his brothers. This guy is sharp. He's the one. David and God said, no, I've refused this. He's not it. So what did he say to David? And Eliab, his oldest brother, heard what he spake unto the man. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David and said, why comest thou down thither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart. For thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. David said, what have I done? Isn't there a cause? Do you understand? Here's Eliab, who, by the way, I think in his own right was a pretty good-sized guy. Oldest brother. He sees David, and you know he's mad at David. Well, why aren't you mad at Goliath? He's the one shooting his mouth off. Goliath's the one that needs his head cut off. Goliath's the one who needs to be dealt with. Why are you mad at David? You know why? Because you're on the sidelines. You're not in the game. When you're in a game, sometimes guys don't like each other. Put them on the same team, and I guarantee you, when the other teams come in, they're together. They're like, let's go. It's us against them, and I choose us. But because they weren't fighting, they're sitting there bickering with each other. Now, I'm not trying to meddle, but you know, and we don't have a lot of problems in church. You guys are fantastic. But I've heard about other churches where people in the church are sitting there nitpicking at each other. Hey, you know what? Take that energy and use it to serve God. Get in the game. We don't have time to bicker with each other. And by the way, when people have things with each other, here's what Christians do. They talk it out. How often people come and say, you know, so-and-so, and I think they don't like me, and there's a thing. I'm like, go talk to them. Don't talk to me. I guarantee if you go talk to them, it's like, oh, it's a misunderstanding. But you know what we do? We nitpick at each other. You know why? We got too much time on our hand because we're not in the game. We're on the sideline. You ever go to a game? Well, okay, the Raiders used to be in L.A. and the Dodgers are in L.A. You go to those games, there's fights in the stands. How many ever seen that? Right? We saw one, the football game. We're over there and some guy and another guy, and they're like, It's like the teams weren't even fighting each other. Because that your energy is in the wrong place. Let's direct that energy and angst towards Satan. Let's channel that passion not against each other, but with each other towards serving the Lord. You know what happens? We forget the purpose. And when we forget the purpose, everything in our life revolves around us and not the Lord. By the way, read the Bible. You look at the word others, okay? The word another. Look at it in the New Testament. We're to love one another. We're to forgive one another. We're to prefer one another. Just look at it. There's a whole bunch of them. We're supposed to put others first. But when we lose it, the purpose is confused, and instead about serving the Lord, the purpose is about us. Let me just tell you, we have a purpose in our church. Our purpose is all about getting the gospel out to this world. It starts in our community. Getting the gospel out to our community. We come in contact with people all the time. We have times to go out soul winning. Let's do it. And then from there, we want to get the gospel out to our state. We want it out in our country, and we want it out to the world, and we want it out to the next generation. But when you are on the sidelines, you're not thinking about any of that. It's all revolved around you. You come into church and you sit down and say, okay, pastor, bless me today. What do you got for me? I'll give you what I got. Maybe it's not very good sometimes. But I'll tell you this, what are you giving to the world? Getting quiet in here. What are we doing to this? What are we doing for our community? When's the last time you invited someone to church? When's the last time you want, and I'm not trying to condemn you, I'm trying to motivate you. When's the last time you shared the gospel with somebody? When's the last time you served in a ministry? If not, you're going to sit in the pew and you're going to bicker. Well, that was blurry this morning. It was. I wrote it down. I text Jeremy right in the middle of the service. It's blurry. I don't like it. The speakers are too loud. That was crooked. That irritates the fire out of me too. I was sick one Sunday and I had to watch a live stream, and the whole time I'm like, fix that. All we do is gripe about things. Now, I get it. If you notice something, let me know. I want to make everything as good in here as I can. But if that's all you notice, hey, there's a typo in the bulletin. Well, I don't do the bulletin, so. I get it. Let's fix it. But is that all you see? You don't see people getting saved and baptized? You don't see buses pulling here with kids who nobody cares about and would never hear the gospel if nobody went into their community? No, we have missionaries in the field. They would have never been on the mission field. They would have never been reached if we would not run a bus by their house. George was a bus kid. He just married Pastor Esposito's daughter. He's on staff. Sold candy to go to our Christian school. If we wouldn't have run a bus, he would have never been reached. Never been reached. Well, you know, those buses, they leak oil. Well, not these ones. They're fairly new. But they will eventually. By the way, your cars leak oil. I see the parking lot. You know why? Because you're driving a Ford. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry, Mrs. Stein. She gets mad at me every time I say that. It's because she's just sitting on the sidelines. You aren't. I know that. I love you to pieces. But you know what the problem is? We just lose our purpose sometimes. And things that we need to fix, I'm being a little facetious. I want things fixed too. Don't get me wrong. But things we need to fix become the focal point of everything we do, not people, okay? Not people. And before we finish, I'll just say this. Sometimes we lose purpose in our personal life. We lose purpose in our marriage. Joseph said, you know, to Joanna and George, you get married, like, man, we're like, what did you say? Trophy hunters. You know, a bagged Alma. Let's move on to the next project. No, you don't bag her. You have to build that thing. Got to have a godly purpose for your marriage. Some of you don't have any purpose for your family. You know, well, what about me? You know, look, when you get married and you have kids, it's not about you anymore. Give that up. Do what you're supposed to do. But man, that wife and that child are the most important thing. And ought to be the most important thing in your life. Not hanging out with your buddies. That's a free one. We lose purpose. What am I saying tonight? Saul was there. Every step of the way. And when Goliath came and all the army pushed back, it's because he pushed back. He sat there silently. I think God could have gave him the victory. I really do. By the way, they didn't even go to God. That was part of his issue. If he would have went to God and said, God, what do you want me to do? God would have said, I got this, go. That's why he made you king. But he didn't do that. Let's get in the game. Let's get in the game. Everybody can get in the game. Don't just be satisfied with coming to church. Say, God, you have a purpose in this world. What's my part? What's my place? Where do I fit? Let's stand together this evening. I went a little bit longer than I thought. Do you know who enjoys the game the most? And by the way, Christianity is not a game. I get that. But do you know who enjoys the game the most? Those that are in. Those that are in the heat of the battle. Those that are there. Those that are off to the sideline, yeah, they're the ones that nitpick. You ever heard of an armchair quarterback? I'll do that. The coach doesn't know what he's doing. You know nothing. You're just sitting there watching. Let me just say, let's serve the Lord. I'm not trying to take 100% of your time. I get that. But we have to do something. This community is not going to reach itself. The gospel is not going to get out unless we go out there and we knock on doors and we pass out invitations. There are people that God has ready. There are people that are looking. If we'll just knock on their door, we have an opportunity. There are people that have problems. They don't have the answers. We can bring them to a place where they can get in the Word of God, because the Word of God has the answer for everything. Not for on the sidelines. Let's serve the Lord. Yes, there's a blessing that we get from God. I'm all in on that. But we have to do our part. Piano's going to play. If God spoke to you at all, why don't you come? Maybe you're in the game, but maybe you've been going through the motions. You don't need to go through the motions. Just putting in the time. Not giving it your all. You have more passion when you're away from whatever it is you're doing in the church than when you are doing that. Hey, Sunday school teachers, I hope when you're in your Sunday school class, you're passionate about that group that God gave you. I hope you're studying for your lessons and you're giving them something from the Word of God. You're giving it your all. If I have to choose, I want to be a David. I don't want to be a Solomon.